everybody.
Hi.
Welcome to the first sketch duel of the day. I'm joined by Lee and Mike, and they will be drawing. They want to draw the Hulk. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Like, because I was like, we're going to take some suggestions, and I'm like, no, as long as we'll do the Hulk. It's the Hulk.
Can we make Hulk-related suggestions?
Yeah.
Okay, Hulk-related suggestions. If somebody says fighting a bear, I'll be mildly upset. It's always, I'm fighting a bear. I'm fighting a shark. I'm getting a hot dog. Okay, so those are not suggestible.
No Hulk in a thong either.
No Hulk in a thong.
I'm not doing that again.
The Hulk doing something mundane.
What about a Hulkini?
A Hulkini. What? Reading a comic book. Doing a Rubik's Cube. No. Have you ever tried to draw a cube, man? That thing's deadly.
Ironing his laundry.
Yes. What? No. No.
Grocery shopping.
No? How about...
You gotta keep saying no until the panel
arrives. Oh, okay, yeah. What else?
Hulk versus a Borg.
I thought it was at the border.
The border.
Running away from a bomb?
Running away from a bomb.
I like that.
He likes it.
You mean like a detonated bomb?
An exploding bomb?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's a good suggestion.
Or do you mean like the latest Richard Gere movie or something? I don't even know what he's done.
That's assignmentable.
I just grabbed.
But right now we're actually killing time before the pencils and pens arrive. So if you guys have questions, you can start now. Because that's what we're going to do. They're going to do the drawing, and then near the end, we're going to put them on the overhead projector. You guys can cheer for the one you think wins, and then
Wait,
draw a name.
Yeah, as a winner.
Yeah, and you get the title of getting your picture taken first.
Oh, I didn't think it was a competition.
We don't have to make it a competition. It's about everybody having fun and getting together and learning and becoming friends.
We're already friends.
All right. So you guys got any questions? Because that's what we're going to do the whole time. Ask them whatever you want. What do you got, young man?
You could have a superpower. What would it be, either of you?
Starfire's boobs.
Starfire's boobs.
I guess mine would be the vanilla superpower of flying.
That would be great.
I don't like heights. I don't like heights.
I'd get used to it. I don't like them either.
Nothing else?
Yeah, I think I don't like heights because I like being in control. And
yeah.
If you're flying under your own power, at least you're in control.
But wouldn't you be worried the whole time you're flying that your magical powers are just going to stop?
Yes.
Like, I'd be terrified. Yeah. Every time I take off, I'd be like, hope it works out this time.
Yeah. What is the flying equivalent of tripping?
Yeah.
Is?
Flying equivalent of tripping.
Because everyone would ask you for a lift.
Favorite hero to read, favorite hero to draw.
Does Sherlock Holmes count as a hero?
Absolutely, he does.
Yeah. Okay. Sherlock Holmes is my favorite fictional character. Favorite character to draw, the Hulk.
The Hulk.
To draw, I think, is Daredevil. But Hulk is pretty close. And I don't know what my favorite character is. I don't read comics, so I don't...
It doesn't have to be comics.
Oh, okay.
Any Richard Gere card.
I just grabbed a name. I have no idea what Richard Gere's done for the last 10 years. Marlon Brando, he's dead. But favorite fictional character. It's probably Daredevil again, I guess. Favorite comic character, anyway.
What is it
about Indiana Jones? How about Indiana Jones?
It's a good call. He's got a satchel.
He's no James Bond.
He's no James Bond. But his dad was James Bond. So what is it about Daredevil that you like drawing so much?
There are a few things. The character within, just the struggles that he's been through, and his desire to be moral and whatever. But also just physically, it's a beautifully simple costume. He moves with a grace that's different than any other character I can think of. I used to, you know, when Daredevil was first created, he was kind of touted as the new. They were trying to recapture what they did with Spider-Man. But they move very differently, and I didn't quite fully realize that until I got a chance to draw Spider-Man for the first time. Because Daredevil's movements are super controlled. You know, he has to be aware of every little thing, one little misstep, and he's not going to land right. Whereas Spidey's are kind of all over the place. So just visually and just internally, there's a lot of really neat things about Daredevil.
What is it you like about the Hulk so much?
The bane of my life is drawing backgrounds and buildings and stuff like that. So usually at the end of any given Hulk story, he's just written. So I can just draw rubble, and I don't have to worry about perspective and all of the difficult things.
And he's so big in the previous pages, he's blocking out all the backgrounds.
So there you go. There you go. He doesn't have a costume to have to remember. And he's just cool to draw. Something very primal. I think kids like the Hulk because there's no filter between how you feel about him and how he is. He's just an angry green guy. There's no surprise at all.
We have drawing utensils, so we will now commence drawing the Hulk and a bomb. That's right, buddy. You enjoy that burger. Is it a burger? Right on. Right on. You guys got questions? Seriously, you guys are like the deadest audience I think I've ever had in one of these things.
Come on.
What are some upcoming projects you guys could talk about?
I love your reaction to every question. It's like, wrong question.
I'm doing something for Marvel that they don't want announced yet, so I can't say it. But it's Avengery.
And I'm doing a Daredevil project that just got announced 2 days ago. The first story arc in a Daredevil anthology book that comes out in June called Daredevil Dark Knights. And my story is called Angels Unaware.
I got a question for you about Daredevil. This is my dad's favorite superhero. My dad will insist, and I'm not joking, my dad will insist that Daredevil has no superpowers, and that's what makes him a cool character. Does Daredevil have superpowers, or is he just an amazing blind guy?
That radar's got to be a superpower,
well,
right?
He says it's just he's tuned his hearing. He can hear it. I'm like, no, he's got radar. It's totally different.
Yeah. He certainly seems like a superpower to me, but not physical strength or anything, but just that ability to, yeah.
All right.
I don't know how it works, though.
He's not my favorite character anymore if he doesn't have
superpowers. I wouldn't ruin that for you. I'm really sorry. Playing my father is terrible.
Punisher doesn't have superpowers. You can pick Punisher.
Yeah, but he's not blind and he carries guns. It's totally different.
What did you think about the Daredevil movie?
I didn't love it. But there are parts of it I liked a lot. I was just saying to somebody out at the table that the part that surprised me how much I liked and I think was the strongest character in the movie was Kingpin. I thought Michael Duncan Clark was phenomenal. Did I say his name? Did I put the names in the right order?
Yeah.
Michael Clark Duncan.
What? Michael, did I say it the other way around?
I can't remember.
Did I say it right? Michael Clark Duncan. I said Michael Duncan Clark. Sorry.
He's dead too. He won't care.
Oh my goodness. That's sad. Am I supposed to be starting?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I didn't know
you
that.
You really are right. You were lucky we're not flying a plane. That's no more, huh? There we go.
If you could tackle any license you haven't done before, what would it be?
Oh man. Any what?
Like be a part of any comic franchise that you haven't previously had a part in before, what would it be?
I don't know if there's a comic book, but I'd love to draw a Highlander comic.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
As long as it was based on the first movie and not the nonsense that followed. And you got like a free CD with it. So
yeah.
You play like the Queen soundtrack.
The Queen soundtrack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mario Van Peebles made an excellent Mongolian. And they get a French guy to play Scottish guy. Like, really? A French guy to play Scottish guy? Yeah. When he's talking about haggis? Yeah, it did. That is the best Scottish accent I've ever heard in my life. Oh, and you get a Scottish guy to play an Egyptian guy who says he's from Spain and he was from Asia.
Sloan Clumsy McCloud.
Yeah. lot of times when artists are doing these, they talk about like the getting to design a costume for a character and like redesigning. Is that something that everybody really wants to do, or are there things where they just need to be left alone?
Sometimes you need to strip it back to where it was when it began.
Yeah.
Costumes tend to accumulate nonsense over a period of years. So whenever I start working on a book, I always look at how they look when the book came out originally. Like the Fantastic Four, you don't need pouches and you know, metal bits here and there.
Pouches.
Oh, God. So for me, it's just simplifying it. Plus, you got to draw it again and again and again.
It's some of these new costume designs are insane.
Yeah.
With the lines, and they're too subtle. They're too subtle for a comic book.
Yeah.
With all the different subtle little seams and lines that go out. Oh boy.
I'm drawing Captain America quite a bit at the moment, and his new costume is. I love Jerome as a guy. And as a talent, he's phenomenal, but the costume is ludicrous. I don't think I've drawn it the same way twice in the thing that I'm drawing. Simple is better for me.
Wait.
What was the question again?
If you could redesign any character, who would you want to do, or what do you think the costumes need to be left alone?
I have no hankering to redesign anybody. I like the original flavor of most of the characters that I'm familiar with, that I grew up with. There's another question I missed though earlier. What was that?
If you could work on anything.
Oh, within this industry, there's a couple that I'd still like to do that I haven't done. I haven't done it. I'd like to do a Hal Jordan Green Lantern, and but I'd also like to do. Some Bible stories as well.
Really?
Yes, sir.
It's a lot of violence in the Bible.
Similar to that Mishima project on the Bible, that huge graphic novel thing?
I don't know that one. Did John Buscema do it?
I think it was Buscema.
Because I know Joe Kubert had something to do with one.
Kubert.
Back in the 70s?
Yeah, it was this gigantic Catholic-sized Bible.
Nestor Redondo?
Yeah.
Yeah, Nestor Redondo, who became a follower a few years later, after doing that project. But, yeah.
What comics did you guys grow up reading?
Well, in England, they reprinted Marvel comics. It's these kind of full-size black and white weekly comics. So I read Avengers, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man. But then when 2000 AD came along, I kind of dropped American comics for a while because it just seemed cooler.
Yeah.
They seem cooler to us, too.
Yeah. It just seemed, I don't know if sophisticated is the right word, but because it was black and white, the art was more illustrative, and that appealed to me a lot. But then I naturally gravitated back to American comics, and my favorite comic growing up was Kirby Fantastic Four. Lee Kirby Fantastic Four. And it still is, I think.
When I was really young, I just read what my two oldest brothers read. A lot of Spidey and FF, Kirby, Ditko. Then by the time I was 12 or 13, I disappeared from comics for about 5 years. And when I started up again, the first comic shop in my home state of Maine opened up, and a buddy of mine took me down, and I picked up FF 193. And I was off to the races. I just couldn't believe how cool it was. And it was a cliffhanger at the end of it. I met home at night. Oh my goodness, I can't believe I didn't get the next one. So I ran down the next day and I got it. And that's what, at about 17, that's what kind of kicked this all off. And then within a year or so, I was pretty sure that I wanted to do this. I mean, I had wanted to do this since I was little, but it kind of set it aside. when I got older.
Now, Mike, you were talking about like black and white comics and how they appeal to you artistically. Do you think that a lot of times people look at black and white stuff as just an unfinished color comic and they're missing what makes it special?
Well, I don't prefer now black and white comics to color necessarily, but things that are drawn specifically for black and white tend to appeal to me quite a bit. And that was the case with 2000 AD because there was never any color intended to be on the artwork. So guys like Boland and Mike McMahon really took advantage of the fact that there wasn't color there. It didn't look like it, just a coloring book. I remember John Byrne did a Judge Dredd story for 2000 AD, and he treated it just like a color comic book. So he left it very open, and it just didn't work at all. But I think some artists, some colorists are definitely deserving to be called artists in their own right now. I did an X-Force issue with Dean White last year, and he's just incredible.
He's amazing.
Yeah. I left the artwork in totally open, didn't spot blacks at all, and he literally painted over my pencils. It was phenomenal.
Have you noticed like a massive transition in the way everything's becoming massively digital? Do you think it was better when people like paint it by hand?
I think there is something lost in like out of Dave Stewart colors Mignola, and he uses a very simple. It doesn't render at all, but he chooses his colors very carefully. And I love that stuff. As long as it's good, I don't care what it is. It can be rendered hugely or very simple, but it doesn't matter how it's what the finished product is, as long as the finished product is good.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. Digital coloring, when it first came around, it seemed like there was a lot of emphasis on the technical end of it, and maybe the guys, it just seemed like there was a lack of understanding of color theory. And also, I tend to gravitate more towards the simpler type of colors, a flatter type color, because it takes a really skilled person, and he definitely mentioned one, Dean White, who's just amazing, who can work especially a guy that draws with a lot of form in the black and white. When there's a lot of shadow and black, there's a certain way to define form in black and white that's not the same way you define form in color. So if you've defined all the form in black and white and somebody comes along and starts redefining the form in color, it's like there are two different languages that can really clash. They don't necessarily work together. So you have to have a very skilled person that knows what they're doing, so the blacks, they'll just start to look garish or pop in a way that they shouldn't otherwise. But there's some phenomenal colorists today that I think it's better than ever. And I'm working with one, Lee Lowridge, who's doing so it's going to be the Lee project. But he's doing a great job, and we're kind of working closely together on this Daredevil thing. And how about Elizabeth Breitweiser?
Oh,
my goodness, she's good. She's amazing. Mm-hmm.
You bring up an interesting point. Every artist, every fan recognizes when there are actual people behind the pages they draw. Who is the very first artist whose style you recognized and realized that's who it was who was drawing?
For me, probably Jack Kirby. He's so recognizable. But the first name I recognized was Stan Lee. He used to write a column for the English comic books, and it was hilarious. He'd be like Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was holding a chimney sweep when he wrote those articles.
But the first person who I kind of fell in love with their work was Byrne on X-Men. He was like the first guy that I actively pursued their comic books.
And it's kind of odd looking at it now, because I think what I really appreciated was Terry Austin's inks, not so much Burns' pencils.
I don't know what the first that I would be aware of. I know that through my older brothers, I became aware of Ditko and Kirby about the same time, and a few other guys, but definitely those two primarily. But when I felt like in that, just a year or two before I left the hobby, the first guy that I kind of felt like I owned, where I owned the collecting of it myself rather than it just being a secondhand hobby of my brothers, it was FF112, John Buscema. John Buscema was the guy that I really fell in love with as a young person, and it's stayed with me today. I think he drew the human form and figures in a way that very few people that have ever lived could do, you know. But he did it in a way that was so realistic, and yet it never stopped being a cartoon at the same time. Some guys can do great realism, but it doesn't animate and move well. He could do the whole thing brilliantly.
Frank, can I ask you a favor? Can you move the microphone a little closer to people at the back? And this is the half hour.
Well, okay, Efficient Magoo. Thank you. Do you guys want to see the pictures before we ask some more questions? A little bit of a halfway point? All right.
It's weird drawing at this angle. Like I want my surface camera because I look at it. And it's...
Let's see if it actually works this time. Oh, look, it is. Oh, it actually is. Working.
Oh, he's getting inks already. Oh man.
Yeah, I don't like pencils.
I don't think we're even gonna get to see your pencils.
Thanks.
It should show up. This is like a 1970s overhead. This is the worst overhead I've ever seen.
No, that's definitely 80s. Yeah. 70s is much, that's a lot further along than the 70s.
It was made with lead in the 70s. You had your hand up, brother.
Yeah, kind of related question. Collecting artists, alive or dead, comics or non, their body of work inspire you or you admire?
You ever heard of Dan Dare?
Dan Dare, like the British comic stuff.
Yeah, in the 50s, a guy called Frank Hampson created a character called Dan Dare for the Eagle comic book. And he only had to produce, I think, 2 pages a week. But he had this big studio pumping out 2 whole pages. But the artwork itself is phenomenal. And he kind of got taken advantage of by the publisher. He wasn't allowed legally to draw Dan Dare towards the end of his life, even when he needed to make some money. He was dying of cancer, I think. So it's kind of a salient lesson for creators as well. But I really like the way he drew. And he's an English guy, so you got to be loyal.
Yeah.
There's a local illustrator that influenced me a lot growing up, just as an inspiration. His name was Jack Havey. He had kind of a Norman Rockwell-esque quality to him. Loved Norman Rockwell growing up. Rembrandt has always been a favorite artist of mine. Anytime I would go to the Met Museum in New York, whenever I went to see, I'd always have to stop in the Rembrandt room. Just gorgeous.
Do you think there's a lot of people that want to get involved in the comics and the art standpoint that kind of overlook those classic masters that painted nobility back in the Renaissance that maybe they really should be paying attention to?
Maybe, but I overlook it too.
Yeah, and I know a couple. I don't know anywhere near as much as I should know. I think anybody or any place you can learn from, if there's something that we're overlooking, it shouldn't be overlooked if there's value in it. Okay, when I was in high school, when I was about 15, my dad had an old book that he tried to... He saw how much I loved to draw, and he had always encouraged it since I was little, and he showed me this art book, but it was an old art book. And it didn't look like the kind of current stuff I was trying to do. So I said, well, that's interesting. It had some weird construction lines that I didn't quite understand. And fast forward a few years later, I go to the Kubert School for a year, and one of the books they had us get for the starter kit was this book by a guy named Andrew Loomis, A Figure Drawing for All It's Worth. And I started flipping through the page. I'm like, this looks really familiar. My dad, when I was a kid, had an original print copy of this phenomenal book, Andrew Loomis's Figure Drawing for All It's Worth. So I had this gold mine of information I could have been diving into when I was a kid, when I loved drawing, but I saw this dated kind of style to the presentation of the material, and I shunned it as a kid. I wish I hadn't. So.
Do you ever encounter things you cannot draw at all, and which ones are they, and how do you get around that?
Not really. I don't like drawing things like gases and liquids. Things that don't have a consistent form or a consistent shape, I find difficult, especially clouds and stuff like that. But now because of Photoshop and stuff like that, you can kind of draw it and then filter it a little bit or reduce the opacity so you can kind of cheat a little bit. So that and Beta Ray Bill. Beta Ray Bill. I just, no matter how many times I've tried, I've probably drawn him about 50 times, and I've drawn him well twice.
It's his mouth. It's a goofy mouth.
Most things I can visualize. Like when I'm drawing the Hulk, I can see the Hulk as a real person standing in front of me. But Beta Ray Bill, I guess maybe because Wallet's so stylized that it's
right.
It's difficult. It looks fantastic, but it's sometimes difficult to get an idea of the shape. So that is particularly difficult for me.
In terms of characters, I have to get into a groove with Captain America's cowl, because there's a certain thing I think you have to do wrong in order for it to look right with the placement of his eye holes and stuff. There's certain... Mm-hmm. If you do it too realistic or whatever, it starts to look wrong. But in terms of things to draw, whenever I get the opportunity to teach, one of the first things I discuss is that drawing comes down to the construction of a few really basic forms, and the most complex thing is just made up of a whole bunch of those very simple forms. And if you can master the few forms, you can draw that thing. But I also find a similar thing with the ephemeral, the ethereal, the gases, or whatever you said. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I can confuse, and I don't think I'm alone in this, the drawing of the thing with the making of the thing. Like sometimes I have to remind myself, I'm just doing a two-dimensional representation of this building. I don't have to construct the thing from the joists up, and to just trust the illusion that sometimes with a very little you can imply a lot. And when you start getting into atmospheric stuff like gases and mists or whatever, and it's a really fun thing to explore, to just let the mist or the smoke or whatever even knock out a lot of the form that, if the Hulk is coming through a cloud of smoke, there's a lot of him that's just going to disappear, and figuring out how to make him fade off into nothing and yet still appear that the whole thing is there. That's always... A challenge, but it's a fun challenge, though. It's really fun to do.
When you guys got into comics, did you have a set goal in mind, and has it changed since you've been involved in the business?
No. My goal was world peace.
Really? My goal was, I think, just to keep working. Because I lived in a small town in the northeast of England, and the only contact I had with my editors was one phone call a month. So really it was just to kind of make my deadlines, hopefully do work that made them want to hire me again. I didn't have any kind of ideas of, I didn't create our own books or getting to do with the X-Men or anything like that. It was just small steps. I'm just not very ambitious.
Well, you've done very well for yourself, sir.
Well, thank you, Dad.
I remember having a really modest financial goal. I just didn't care about making a lot of money doing it. I didn't know whether people did or not. I didn't know. Just wanted to tell stories, draw the characters that I love to. I also didn't have a whole lot of ambition to do my own characters, although I'd come up with a few. Actually, even the reason I came up with those was when I went to the Cuba School, it seemed like every other of my classmates, or most of them, had books filled with character design, stuff that they had created worlds and characters. And I remember thinking, maybe I'm in the wrong place. Maybe these guys seem really dedicated to it. But I came to learn more that like my sketchbooks were all filled with unfinished drawings, a hand, an arm, an ankle. But it was... I can see now how there was, I was building more of a foundation of drawing than worrying about, how many belt loops the guy was going to, whatever. Just the character design thing wasn't my bag. I wasn't as into it. Yeah, it wasn't anything that lasted very long. I think it was just when it was new, and you don't know, am I going to measure up or whatever. It was just time. I mean, I'm still waiting for some of it to get over some of it. It's been 30 years, so there's always like a certain amount of did I get that right? I think if you're not examining yourself all the time, then you're not pushing yourself to go further. And if you it's like someone was showing me their work recently, and they're and it's someone that I know, so it wasn't a first time thing, telling me all the things that was wrong with it. And I said, don't feel bad about the things, be grateful you see the things that are wrong with it, because that's like the empty place you're going to fill up with what you learn in the next stage of your study. If you didn't see anything wrong with it, well, that'd be the kiss of death. Because there'd be nothing to go forward with. So it's like, I know it doesn't make it easy when you're the one seeing the stuff that's wrong in your work, but it just helps me a little bit.
Since the artwork is such an important part of the story, how closely do you like to work with the writers while you're illustrating what they've written?
I like to get to a writer before he starts writing, just to kind of cut him off at the pass. Because if they're left to their own devices, they'll have you drawing all kinds of nonsense. But it's kind of nice to talk to them, ask them what they want to do, what the intent is behind the story. Because nowadays, writers tend not to write a full issue and then give it to you. They'll write like 4 or 5 pages and then send you that, and then another 4 or 5. And there, it seems to me, they're looking for the story as they write. So you often get lots of splashes and spreads at the beginning of the story, and then when it gets to the last third, they realize, we're running out of time here, let's get some 9-panel pages in there. So if they tell me what the story is, then maybe I can thumbnail it, send them some ideas and stuff. So I don't care what I have to draw, as long as it's a story.
It that would drive me crazy.
Yeah, drives me crazy.
Oh, man. There's a job, a big job in my past that I just, 2 issues into it, it was a story arc. That I could tell that, and that's not been a regular thing for me, but 2 issues into it, I could tell the person didn't know what the story was.
Yeah.
And they were stalling. And to this day, I cannot tell you what that story was about. I can't. And it was maddening. Because to me, I feel like if I'm drawing somebody's script and I feel like I'm not hitting on their point, it's a very uncomfortable feeling. It was drilled into me very early, story is king. Mm-hmm. It is about the story. That I'm a servant of the story. Whatever I can do to help that story be advanced. Mm-hmm. So if he hasn't given me the story to work with, I'm gonna. It's a very uncomfortable feeling. It'd be like a cat in the backseat of a car.
Like that, would the office be open to suggestions? I mean, can you discuss the story and change it, or is it too late? Then?
Depends who the who the writer is.
Yeah, you can ask questions. You don't know what you're going to get for answers. So.
Yeah. But, some writers are very open, very, very willing to talk to you. And other writers can only be reached out to once a month. So, I love the names, but this gentleman's recording it.
It's not Richard Gere. I wish I hadn't said that.
Was that like a specific comic that you guys read when you were in your formative years, and after you read it, you're like, this changes everything?
Yeah, actually it was. There's a monthly anthology book called Warrior in the UK that Alan Moore wrote V for Vendetta for. He wrote the Bo Jeffries saga, Marvel Man, right? I guess that turned Miracle Man. But that was like a huge deal to me when I was about 13, 14. Just because, it seems so much more sophisticated, so much more, I don't know if cool is the right word, because I hate comics that kind of consciously try to be cool. I hate anything that consciously tries to be cool. But it seemed literate. The artwork seemed a lot more sophisticated than the American comics I was reading. And I was kind of falling out of the routine of buying comics every month when that came out. And so I just kind of clung on to that for 3 or 4 years until my senses came back and I realized comics were the be-all and end-all again.
Different things at different times. That FF112 as a young kid, 12 or 13 or 11 or whatever I was. I was only like 8 or 9 when that came out. I'm sorry. That was a big watershed moment. And then when it came back in, that FF193, because it triggered the whole thing. But within a year or so after that, actually we all got into, my two friends and I, a couple of friends and I, got into Warrior magazine as well. There, 1980-ish was a great period. My memory of it anyway was a great period, because there was lots of interesting things, smaller publishers coming out. So you had things like Gene Colan's pencils reprinted in
Nathaniel Dusk.
Nathaniel Dusk. Did you like that?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love that. The Apple Peddlers Die at Noon. I think that was the second. Yeah. I love the title. I can say Apple Peddlers Die at Noon all day. But stuff like that was just so exciting. Or American Flag. Or even Gene Colan's Ragamuffins. Mm-hmm. I think that was for DC. That was great. It seemed like they were trying a lot of things. They did the first graphic novels, the death of, the death of Jim Starlin, the death of Captain Marvel. I'm sorry, by Jim Starlin. And
also in magazines like Amazing Heroes and Comics Interview, you started seeing pencils reproduced for the first time. I hadn't seen pencils before.
There was one, I've told Dennis Cowan this so many times, but one of those, and I don't know if it was Amazing Heroes or what, but when I was, 19 or so, I think he's a year or so older than I am, maybe a couple of years. But he was a young guy that was just coming up, and they reproduced a pencil drawing of his. I think it was Doc Savage in one of the. And I just, that just lit a fire in me. Because it kind of puts what you have to chase after. Uh-huh. Dennis is great.
Yeah.
And there were lots of great stuff, great things coming out then. And even in the mainstream stuff, in Omega Man and. Mm-hmm. Right, and that was a cool period.
Yeah,
what is it about the Fantastic Four you like so much?
Me?
Anything can happen.
Fantastic Four is like a great. The thing that Marvel did so great is they added a soap opera element to these comics. They made them more accessible to the readers. And the two flagship, I call them the co-flagship books of Marvel. You had Fantastic Four, which was like. Team of adventures, of family adventures in the comics of about 10 years.
Challenges?
Is that what it was?
Is it? Challenges of the Unknown?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
But here you had, they had real world problems. And with FF, you had a great plot driven comic book that had cool, neat character elements. And I think Spidey almost like flipped it, where it was a tremendous character driven book with some cool plot stuff that happened. Because I found as a kid, when I would read Spidey once or twice, when I'd go through subsequent readings of the same book, I'd skip the Spider-Man stuff, and I'd read the character stuff, because what made the fight stuff so great, the Spidey action stuff so great, was the underpinning of what was going on in his life that held it up, and the stuff that was driving him forward. But yeah, just FF, it was a great, tremendous blend of characters. Ben Grimm is just he's one of those, you know, there's a few of them. There's Nick Fury, Wolverine, Ben Grimm, you know, kind of a guy. And it's just a lot of fun to read and to try to write and to draw.
Mike?
Yeah, I like Fantastic Four because just the imagination. Anything could happen. I mean, it's kind of more science fiction based. Although I did love Spider-Man too. But yeah, and I love the thing. The thing reminds me of my granddad. It's kind of a heart of gold, but no nonsense kind of guy. And yeah, it's a family.
Yeah,
that's kind of weird. They've got something at stake when they're when Spider-Man's being Spider-Man, he only has to worry about himself. But the Fantastic Four have got to make sure that, you know, everyone goes out and everyone comes back again. That's kind of raises the tension a little bit.
What was the very first scripted comic you worked on?
I didn't have a script. The first comic I drew was an issue of Justice League that Keith Giffen wrote. And Keith would send his mini comics. So he would draw the comic with kind of stick figures, bubble figures. That's what I did for about the first year I was in comics. I didn't get any script at all.
Did you like that more than the actual script?
Yeah, oh god, yeah. Yeah, because it was like someone had already drawn my thumbnails for me. And someone who knew how to tell a story much better than I did. And after the second or third issue, I started changing things around because I thought I could do it as well as he could. And it became pretty obvious pretty quickly that I couldn't. So anything I know about storytelling, I learned from him. He's a good teacher.
When was that?
88.
Mine was, professionally, was the thing that my buddy and I did together, but he wrote the script, Tom Field. Friends Don't Let Friends Drive Drunk, a horror story for Tales of Terror number 5, Eclipse Comics. It used to be Twisted Tales with Pacific, but when Eclipse got a hold of those two titles, they had to change Alien Worlds to Alien Encounters, and Twisted Tales became Tales of Terror.
We have 10 minutes left, boss.
Uh-oh.
Even though you said you're not reading a lot of comics these days, are there any exciting recent, like current developments that you've observed that you find particularly interesting?
I was being half facetious, but not fully.
So what's the most interesting developments at the moment from your point of view?
I think whatever Mike McCone's working on is the most interesting development.
I still look at comics. I just don't really read them anymore. So I buy the trade if, like, Olivier has drawn an arc, or you know, Terry Dodson has done an artwork, of course, Lee. So I buy them for the pictures now, not the words so much.
I'm sorry.
No. So I'm not really aware of. I know what's going on at Marvel because I, you know, I work with some of them.
Yeah. It's okay.
What?
My belly's rumbling. So I guess New 52 is the thing that everyone was talking about for a while. But it, there's too much interesting industry gossip to be going on with to worry about what's happening in the comments.
The things that excite me in the recent past are some of the special edition things they're doing, like the artist editions of the IDW things.
There you go. Yeah.
Or one of the other friends from that comic shop experience back before I broke in, he ended up going on to, he had a couple of close calls with Jim Shooter in the 80s where he almost got work and they kept, I don't understand it because I think he is one of the greatest story guys I've ever known. I've learned more, and when he said about storytelling, I thought of Bruce, my friend Bruce. I've learned as much or more about storytelling, not necessarily as a teacher to student thing, but sometimes even just through our conversations and exploring the ideas of storytelling, but also just receiving stuff from him. But his first comic was one of my favorite jobs, Batman Chronicles The Gauntlet from around 96, 97. That was the first comic he ever wrote. If you've never read that, not because I drew it, it's a great story. It's an out-of-time story of Robin's final test, the original Robin, where Batman allowed him to become Robin. So what was the question again? I kind of went off on it.
Interesting developments.
Oh, yeah. So he is now associate editor for those handsome, big hardcovers that IDW puts out of, like, the latest of the Alex Toth books. And
yeah.
they did the Terry and the Pirates, Milton Caniff stuff. He does it with Dean Mullaney, who gave me my first job. Dean Mullaney was the publisher at Eclipse. So it's a weird kind of full circle thing that's happened there. But, yeah. Sorry, I stop every time I start talking. Sorry about that. Mike is multitasker. I'm not good at that.
Your procrastination / pastime choice is there something we want to step away from the boards?
What's your pastime time when you have free time?
I have a dog, an 18-year-old Jack Russell, and it takes him an hour to walk around our block. So that's what I do on my spare time. keep my aging dog alive.
I personally resent the implication that I ever procrastinate anything. Sudoku.
I alienate people on Facebook. That's what I do.
Facebook exists just to alienate people.
Yeah.
Right.
5 minutes left.
I'm starting again. I don't like this.
I've been asked if we can do the auction sooner rather than later because there's a lineup.
Oh, an auction?
Not the auction. The
draw. All right. We'll give you guys like.
Oh dear. I'm sorry. I talked too much.
Well, you give good answers. It's all good. All right. You guys got your tickets, right? Those of you who are here on time have your tickets, and that's what's important. All right. Might I take your drawing and put it on
the
overhead? So
I guess I'll sign it on the way. I cheated quite a bit. I didn't want to draw an explosion. An angry Hulk.
Wow.
It's exploding on his bum.
On, I was going to say it looks more like, like he had a bad burrito or something.
We're not going to do a winner. We're all winners.
If I had known that, I would not have done this. No.
0653295.
Is this for both of them or one of them?
No, one of them. They get to pick one. 0653295.
You picked
the
one guy.
All right, moving on. Lost your chance. 0653335.
They said sign it,
whatnot.
0653335.
Guy doesn't want it.
Yay!
Thank you. Do you
want me to
sign it?
Yes, please.
Okay. What's your name?
It's Alex.
0653277. Wow, the same row.
Thank you very much.
Make a round of applause for your artists, everybody.